Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Ryan Malone aired his promised program on some of the music discussed in Thad Carhart's wonderful memoir, The Piano Shop on the Left Bank, on Monday, August 21st. And he titled that program, Literature Soundtrack, The Piano Shop on the Left Bank. So if you have not yet, you can hear this program at KPCG-FM. And so don't miss it. I'm sure you'll really like it. Now, when I was a young boy, my favorite genre of books was science fiction. Now, I was a sickly little kid, and here's why. I had what they titled, or they called, nocturnal bronchial asthma. And so that meant that my summertime and early fall activities were very limited. I was allergic to not only house dust, I was allergic to dust, period, and I was allergic to pollens, but especially ragweed. So I was not permitted to play baseball or football, just like the other guys my age. And sometimes I was bullied a lot because I was, pretty athletic looking. But to escape my often boring situation, I would walk to and explore our public library, and what I would do is I would check out the latest science fiction. Now, it's very interesting. One time, I even discovered that someone used a $20 bill as a bookmark, and I couldn't find the owner, so I felt rewarded for my reading. It's great. It's great to have 20 bucks handed to you from a book. But one of my favorite books during those years was Madeline Engel's, Madeline Lee Engel, it's just a little bit of a different name, but she wrote A Wrinkle in Time, and I remember this book had a big impact on me. I think it was 1963 when the book came out, so I probably read it either that summer or maybe the summer of 64. But this book got me thinking about big concepts like time travel and the mysteries of the universe, and the potential of visiting other planets in the universe. Now, all of this was a great thing because it helped me take the focus off of myself and my problems. And, you know, I was able to learn to think bigger. Now, some of it has gotten a little wacky, but, I think it does help us get a bigger picture. And a good science fiction is based on science or the facts of science. Now, Disney is planning to release a film based on Madeline Lee Engel's book, A Wrinkle in Time, and I'm not necessarily recommending that movie. It won't come out till the spring of 2018, and so don't consider this a recommendation of the film because I haven't seen it yet, and so I don't know what I'll think of it. But I think you know from listening into JBL for over the last year or so, you know that I believe that often the books are much better than the movies. So definitely read the book first. And it's going to be a very popular bestseller. I'm sure she's going to sell a lot of books again. So today what I want to do is I want to have a special length program. So this is going to go a little longer than our normal 27-minute program. But what I want to do is I want to introduce you to the classic science fiction novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And, of course, that's by Jules Verne. Now, I know when I picked this book for the Summer of Classics series, some people wrote in and say, why didn't I pick, some of his other novels? And there are, he was a prolific writer. I think he wrote over 65 novels. And we'll talk about that as we go through this program. But the reason why I picked 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is because Jules Verne really did have a great emphasis on science and science facts. And he really tried to weave these into his novels. And in some ways, I think we could call his science fiction novels science fiction adventure novels, especially when we get into 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I mean, this should be a very important book for all science fiction fans. And, of course, so should Jules Verne. I mean, he is really considered the father of the science fiction genre. And if you, you know, we'll be talking about his biography here during these this next hour or so, or maybe it'd be about 56 minutes that we're going to be talking. But he really was into science, and he really was like an adventurous traveler. And of course, he wrote, in all of his books, there was always travel involved in it. And even this book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne, it's not where where he went 20,000 leagues down under the sea, but he traveled 20,000 leagues around the sea. And again, you're going to hear some other people I'm going to quote from that talk about this. And actually, the book, if you would look at it in French or translate it literally from French, it should be 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas, and that means the seven seas. And so in this book, he does travel all through the seven seas. So essentially, he's talking about the distance he traveled in the book, not necessarily the depth of the ocean where he went. In fact, I think the deepest part in the book is like four leagues. We'll figure that out. And I think I might have a quote on that. I'm working from my memory, and that's always a dangerous thing. But you should really want to read this book. It is a classic, and it's really just like a famous painting. So many people want to see the Mona Lisa. I know I've had an opportunity to see it, and I just wanted to see it almost all my college career, and I finally had the opportunity to see it a few years ago. And I got there, I was just waiting for this fabulous, big, famous painting, and it's very small. When you actually see it on the wall, it's very small, but it's still just a stunning painting. Or it's just like a big, beautiful piece of sculpture. I still want to get to Florence sometime. That's on my bucket list, by the way. I want to get to Florence, Italy, and see the Statue of David, if I can. So let me just, I want to open this segment of the program with I think it's a really great review of the book, and it's from the year 2011 or 2011. And the review was written by British novelist Margaret Drabble. Now, if you don't know about Dame Drabble, and that's, she is a dame, if you don't know about her, this fact may help you. She was formerly married to Clive Swift. Now, some people out there are going to know who Clive Swift was. I knew who Clive Swift was, but I didn't realize it until I looked it up on the internet. But Clive Swift is the famous British actor who is best known as Richard Bucket or Richard Bouquet in the famous television series Keeping Up Appearances. So if you've ever seen that program, and my wife and I, we love that program. Sometimes we'll stay up late Sunday night watching it. But he was he's the husband of Mrs. Bouquet. And of course, it's just a great comedy. But the title of her review is Book of a Lifetime, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Now, like I said, Dame Drabble is she's a famous British novelist. She's also a book critic, and she's a very, very prolific writer herself, and has won more than one book award for her writing. And so she does understand books and the importance of books. And here's the title of her review. She says, in terms of like the title of what her review is, it's Book of a Lifetime, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. So that's the title. But she says this is a book of a lifetime. And she goes on to say, she opens up by saying, one of the books I have read and reread with unfailing pleasure and interest is Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I can date my first reading precisely, as I still have my copy given to me by Mummy and Daddy Christmas 1948 when I was 9. And so here she was 9 years old when she first read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and her mom and dad had given her, you know, a beautiful edition of it. She says, this edition was published in 1946 in Cleveland, Ohio, and has beautiful illustrations of sea creatures and seascapes and of the brave and adventurers who travel with Captain Nemo in his spacious submarine, the Nautilus. As a child, I liked the pictures of the narwhal and the kelp forest best, but now I also admire the narrator and his manservant, Conseil. And, she's talking about the characters. But remember, she had this illustrated version. I actually, when I was reading this review, I tried to go and see if I could find an illustrated version myself. And I think I found a pretty old copy on abebooks.com, and it was in fine shape, they say. And so I did buy a hardbound copy of it just to see if I could get a good illustrated copy. But she goes on to say, illustrated books were a rarity in that post-war period and all the more to be cherished. I loved the underwater world and would have been a marine biologist if I had had any scientific encouragement at school. Now, she actually, went to some of the fine schools in England, actually went to Cambridge. So, and of course, she read literature for her degree. She says, the flying fish and sharks and giant squid of Verne's novel entranced me. I was in love with Captain Nemo, the brooding, cultured misanthrope of the deeps who combined the romantic qualities of Heathcliff and Byron with the ruthlessness of Macbeth. So here she's bringing in Bronte, Charlotte Bronte, who was a famous British author. Here she's bringing in Lord Byron, who was a famous British poet. And then she's also bringing in Macbeth, who was, the ruthless Macbeth, who was obviously made very famous by William Shakespeare. And so we know that she is a well-read person. Then she goes in and she says in parentheses, James Mason played him to perfection in the excellent movie, and Kirk Douglas was brilliant as the champion harpooner Ned Land. And so here she's talking about characters, and we'll talk about them, as we move through the program. But she goes on to say, what drove Nemo restlessly around the oceans of the world with his great library, his art treasures, and his grand piano? I long to know. I moved on to Verne's scientific romances and Wagger novels, and am still discovering new ones, as he was very prolific. I don't know why I liked his adventures so much, as they were very male, set in a world of avant-garde technology and old-fashioned gentlemen's clubs, about which I knew next to nothing. And to me, that brings out a point, is it does give us a view into society in, the 19th century or the late 1800s. And, as we've talked about in our Dickens programs, as we talked about in Jane Austen, is this was a very high culture period of time. And here we have this Captain Nemo, who is obviously a great scientist, and he built this Nautilus long before people even thought you could do that. But here they were gentlemen, and they, in his Nautilus, he carries an excellent library, and he carries, like artwork. He's an upscale kind of guy. And so it's really a time, I think, that a lot of us still long for, because so much of our society is just breaking down. We don't have, the emphasis on character and the emphasis on, using good character in social situations or using good etiquette. So it really is something to dream for. But she goes on, I don't know why I liked his adventures so much, as they are very male. Now she goes on, I read that part, so let me just skip down here a little bit. She says, he doesn't do women, but I didn't even notice their absence. And so when you do read this novel, there is no romance. And, of course, that's kind of a slang way of saying it. But, we'll see that Verne was really focusing on the adventure and the science. And that's what really what he was after. So, any parents out there, they don't have to worry about their teenage children reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's actually great for their education. But he says, I followed him to the center of the earth and to the North Pole. I went down with him into the mammoth caves of Kentucky, but Captain Nemo remained my hero, and I was overjoyed to rediscover him recently during another binge of Verne reading last summer. She goes on, by happy coincidence, I embarked on Verne's The Mysterious Island, which is a book I remember reading as a young guy, during the volcanic ash cloud drama of last year. And so this dates the review, if you remember back to 2010, and I think also in 2011, Iceland had those volcanic eruptions that disrupted the air traffic in Europe for days. But she goes on, this inventive tale describes the adventures of a group of balloon-wrecked refugees from the American Civil War who land on an unknown and massively active volcanic island and make a life for themselves. The reader discovers that a secret but benign presence lurks in a deep, basaltic cavern nearby, and eventually, joy of joys, this reveals it to be none other than Nemo himself. We learn at last his name and his history as he makes a deathbed confession to the castaways before sinking entombed alone in Nautilus beneath the waters. She says, I won't give away his identity, but it's worth waiting for. So she's already setting me up in a way. Maybe in the future we'll have to read, The Mysterious Island to find out actually who Nemo really is. But again, Margaret is a great storyteller herself, and she's very well known. I would say probably more in Britain than the United States. But again, I'm just saying that off the top of my head, so I maybe am not really as accurate with that. But here's a very educated woman. Here's a very educated writer saying, look, one of her favorite books that she reads and rereads is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And so it is worth reading. And I know people would rather I've picked one of other of Jules Verne's books, but actually I had not read this one. And so I figured I would like to read it and, see what it's all about. So here's just a few more facts about the book. The novel was originally serialized in a magazine from March 1869 through June 1870. Now, that was really typical of that time. And remember, we just talked about Dickens' Great Expectations, and he serialized that book, in a magazine. And so when you had a really good novel, a really interesting book, and you serialize it in a publication, you obviously sold more magazines. And the publisher at that time was Pierre Jules Herzl, and it was put in this French publication, and I'll just try and slay the French here, Magazine d'Education et de Recreation. And basically, this was a magazine for education and recreation. So that much I know. But the book was then given in a deluxe illustrated edition, and it was also published by Herzl in November 1871, and it did include 111 illustrations by a famous French illustrator, Alphonse de Neuville, and his associate, Edward Riau. So they really did spend a lot even in developing the book and getting it ready for publication. But when the book came out, and again, even when it came out of the magazine, it was highly acclaimed when it was released. And it is still highly regarded. It is still, read regularly, and it's still in print. I mean, they're still selling, a lot of books of this title. And so it is regarded as one of the premier adventure novels and probably one of Verne's greatest works. Now, I think some people have written me they wished we had done Around the World in 80 Days or maybe Journey to the Center of the Earth, but I think this one is so important because he really focused on science, and he really gave some ideas that weren't even thought of yet, and he really helped to generate this time period of fascination with invention. When you even look at his ship, and Nemo's ship, I mean, it is called the Nautilus. Now, that was considered ahead of its time. And yet in the book, he accurately describes features on submarines. I mean, features on submarines today, even the, you know, the way the submarines would have to come up, you know, from the, you know, bottom of the ocean or from underneath the sea to be able to, you know, bring fresh air into it. And of course, if you as we get into the book, you'll see that he was analyzing, well, he either has a chemical process to make oxygen or they have to come up and breathe like a whale. Now, some of the ways I want to talk about science when we go through this is if you look at the greatest scientist that exists in the universe, we have to admit that it's God, because so many of things in science we've learned from nature. I mean, how did we learn you know, how to deal with the atmospheric pressures under the sea? And Jules Verne spends a lot of time in the book explaining those, so he's understood them. But when we studied the whales, that's how we learned those things. And so those things were already created. And what we've done is we've borrowed from that and we've made these incredible inventions. So again, when he was writing about submarines, I mean, they were what we had. They had some during the Civil War. They were very primitive vessels. And so, but when you look at what he describes in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, it's really pretty sophisticated. So those are just some of the facts on the book. Remember, it was printed in a magazine first. Then when it was so highly acclaimed, when they brought it out, they put it in a beautiful illustrated edition. And it was, you know, just really sought after. It is quite interesting. Jules Verne is French. He was writing in French, but it was translated into English and very popular book. And so from that standpoint, it is, I think it's a real treasure, and it's really worth reading, and it's worth your time to read. Well, I do want to get into the biography of him a little bit, and I think it's important, and you know, as you've been listening to JBL, that I feel like if you're going to really understand an author's book, you need to understand a little bit about the author as well. And certainly with Jules Verne, he was born in 1828, and so he really came in, let's say, he was really born at the early part of the 19th century, and then he did live till he was till the year 1905. So it's almost he was alive for a whole century, and maybe just three quarters of a century, I guess we could say that. But again, please don't fault me for my bad math. Remember, I'm a literature guy, not a mathematician. But he was born in Nantes, France, in 1828, and essentially, if you know anything about Nantes, France, it is a busy maritime port city. And can you imagine Verne as a boy? He was exposed to seeing all these seagoing vessels, and he would see them, you know, arrive at the docks, and they would depart at the docks. And certainly, if you think about young boys or young girls, certainly you would have to think that he would want to have been, you know, on those ships. And I'm sure his mind was just imagining travel all the time. And like I said, even when I was reading science fiction novels, and sometimes I was kind of, you know, locked in the house to, you know, to keep me away from pollens, or, you know, I was not able to play baseball with my brothers or even with my friends. And so I was just kind of locked in the yard, or, you know, and sometimes I felt like I was in prison because of the asthma. And, you know, but in my mind, I could just travel places. Well, I'm sure he probably felt the same way. So, but again, he was very close to the sea. And I think if you remember all the way back to, we talked about Ben Franklin, actually was going to run away. Remember, his dad wanted him to be a minister, and he was going to run away, and he was going to go to the sea. And so, actually, Jules Verne did the same thing when he was about 11. He actually wanted to run away and, you know, travel on the sea. Well, let's just go ahead and take a break now, and then what we'll do is we'll come back and we will continue our discussion of Jules Verne's biography.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leib on 101.3 KPCG.
Well, hello again, everyone. Well, we're back now with, and we'll continue with our biography of Jules Verne. Remember that he was born in 1828, and he was actually born in February, on February 8th, 1828. And so he was born in Nantes, France, I guess I could say. And that was kind of like a busy maritime port city. And so Verne did spend a lot of his time looking at ships and sailing ships, and he had his mind on, those kind of things. I'm sure every young boy would have the same thing. His father, Jules Verne's father, was a very good lawyer, and he wanted Jules to go to law school. And Jules did not want to do that. In fact, he was very romantic in his life, and essentially, when he was 11 years old, he ran away, and he wanted to be on a sailing ship. And in many ways, we'll see it before we get through the end of the biography. Jules Verne really had a lifelong fascination with sailing ships. But what happened is his father caught up with him and stopped him from running away on a sailing ship, and he actually caught him and severely pummeled. I didn't want to say the word pummeled, but he really did severely punish him. And I think Jules Verne, probably really respected his father, but he never really did attempt to do that again. And but he would say that he would travel in his mind. And again, I can relate to that somewhat because, I talked to you a little bit before the break, that even I had bronchial asthma, and I was, in some ways, I was kind of limited. And I think in some ways I probably, to keep me healthy, and my parents really did have to invest a lot to keep me healthy, I think they were probably overprotective of me. And I remember the doctor telling them, well, look, he probably shouldn't play baseball and probably shouldn't play, football, but why don't you let him play basketball? And I did. I mean, I did participate in other sports. I did. I was a great ice skater, learned how to skate. I love skating. I also was not really bad at tennis either. But those were things I could do kind of on my own and not get around a lot of dust and dirt and pollen and things like that. So, Verne said that what he did was he would travel in his mind, and he did a lot of research and he did a lot of study, and he gathered a lot of facts about places. And so in some ways he was really preparing himself to be a great writer. And you can see, and I said this before the break, that even though he's considered the father of science fiction, a lot of his novels would be called adventure science fiction. I mean, this whole thing in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you have, Captain Nemo, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself a little bit, but you have Captain Nemo as kind of this dark character with this mysterious past. And, of course, the main character of the book, he takes himself and he takes his servant, and there's Ned, and they go out chasing after this. They think it's just a huge beast, but it's not. And so there's adventure there. Eventually what happened is that Verne did go and try and study. He did study law. He did become a lawyer, but he did not like it. And what he ended up doing, really to the dismay of his father, he wanted to start a writing career, and that's what he loved the most. And actually, he started out by writing plays and librettos for operas. And so in some ways, that's not necessarily, when you become a writer, you realize unless you get very well known, you're not going to be very wealthy. And so he did really struggle a lot, with his writing. I want to read to you some more from this, his biography, and this is from bio.com, by the way. Verne was a great student, and even when he was in law school, he learned to do research. He learned you know, to really study and apply himself. And but even when he was in boarding school, and so many of these young men were put into boarding school, but he began to write short stories and poetry. And I really think it's kind of interesting, even if you look at Dickens, if you remember just back to those programs, Dickens also wanted to write plays, and he didn't do so well as a playwright. And but if you look at Shakespeare was a playwright. Shakespeare was definitely into poetry. And so you can see how these things all work together. He did graduate, you know, as a lawyer. But again, he was attracted to literature. And what he did after he graduated from law school, he did move to Paris, and he befriended a group of artists, and he befriended other writers like Alexandre Dumas. He's a very famous author, and I think probably all of you out there know some of the things he's most popular for. I'll let you figure that out. He did get in the company of writers, and then he actually did write several plays, and they were performed in Paris, and so. You know, so that's really quite interesting. But he did totally, you know, upset his father. And, you know, he did not get into his law career like he wanted to. And actually, his father wanted him to, you know, open a law practice with him in Nantes, and he wouldn't do it. And so he actually stayed involved in the writing career. And actually, he took a meager paying job as secretary of the theater. I'm going to call it Le Rique, and excuse my French for all the French people out there, but it's Theatre Le Rique, and he did produce two plays while he was there. One was called Blind Man's Bluff, and the other one was The Companions of Marjolaine. Now, I've never seen those, so I don't know what they're about. But let me just, I just wanted to, this is not in the biography, this is on another bio that I got. And again, I think I brought this up that he did struggle a lot as a writer. But by the time he died, he was a very prolific writer. And his writing includes 65 novels, 20 short stories. He wrote essays and plays. Now, there is some disputation over the exact number of novels. And, it turns out that if you look over his 40-year career, he wrote at least one book per year. And he really wrote on a wide range of topics as well. He is considered the father of science. And his three most famous novels, I think I've already mentioned this, but his three most famous novels have all been made into movies at one time or another. So you have Around the World in 80 Days, that was made into a movie. Journey to the Center of the Earth, also made into a movie. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, also made into a movie. And in some ways, the movies aren't necessarily as good as the books, but they certainly advertise the books. And I always believe the books are better. And there's a lot of times I've gone to movies and say, well, they cut this out of the book, or they cut that out of the book. And, you know, sometimes directors, they put in what's going to sell more, or, you know, it's where the money making is. Now, some compare Jules Verne's to H.G. Wells. And remember, H.G. Wells wrote The Time Machine. And Verne did not like that. He did not like the comparison because he was a very pragmatic writer. And he felt that when he wrote his books, they were actually more scientific and based on facts. And he tried to be realistic and practical, although I think there's some argument could be made really clearly that Journey to the Center of the Earth was really not maybe as practical, you know, as maybe he thought. But one thing that I want to stress is much of what he wrote about definitely were included. The things he wrote about are included in the Evangelists that actually came into being later. And so he may have been the father of science fiction, but he was really ahead of his time. And, you know, some of the things he talked about were like spacecraft. Well, we have spacecraft now. Helicopters. We have helicopters. Guided missiles. We have guided missiles. Now, if you look at 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, his submarine Nautilus predated the first successful submarine by 25 years. And so if, I mean, look at that. I mean, what I'm trying to say here is he really inspired and sparked this I think, generation of, well, being inventive. The first electric submarine was built in 1886 by two Englishmen and was also named the Nautilus. Then in 1995, the first nuclear-powered submarine was also named the Nautilus. So you can see the impact that this book had. Now, one of the things that you know, we talk about often on, you know, the KPCG FM is we do talk about, you know, the literature of Herbert W. Armstrong. And we know that this time period, when you look at the early 19th century, it was the time period when we were at the rise of the United States and Britain on the world scene. And if you look at, you know, our great strides in industry, our great strides in military invention, our great strides with space, you know, that was all prophesied to happen because, well, we're really the chief nations of Israel, and we've had all these incredible blessings by God to make us really strong and profitable. And so you can see that even the writings of Jules Verne could have helped inspire that and to really, you know, move things forward. Now, Verne himself believed in evolution. And so in some ways, you know, that's really sad, but that was really part of that time period. But really is, if you look at God, and he is the great creator, there's no doubt in my mind, there's no doubt in our mind, he's a great creator. He's also, you know, a great poet. If you look at the Bible, most of it, or a lot of it, I should say, is poetry. But you know, God certainly has the handle on science. I mean, he created all the laws of physics. You know, he created the laws of chemistry. And so it's just up for us to discover them, but he gave us a human spirit that could help us do that. And so even though Verne did believe in evolution, he did believe that science and technologies and machines would help the world progress. And in many ways, that was true. But then also, in a very sad way, our progress could also be our undoing. And, you know, our technology could end up being the Frankenstein monster that wants to destroy us. So, let's get back to his biography now. But again, I just want you to see what an impact he's had, not only just in the science fiction world, but also in the world of science. And with he was a very positive person. He was a can-do person. And, you know, he certainly inspired that in some of the great science inventors. In 1856, I don't want you to think that Verne was unromantic. He actually fell in love with a woman. Her name was Honorine Devane, and she was a young widow with two daughters. They married in 1857, and he realized then he needed a stronger financial foundation. And so Verne, again, was trying to write, but then he began working as a stockbroker. So you see, he really didn't like the law, and I'm sure that was just absolute disgusting to his father. Now, he would not abandon his writing career. And it was 1857 that he wrote his first book. Now, here's what's also interesting is, remember I said in the first segment of this program that he loved sailing ships. And it turned out that his wife also loved to travel. So in 1859, Verne and his wife, they did embark on this first of approximately 20 trips to the British Isles. I mean, he saw that there was a lot going on in Britain. He saw that that's where the happenings were, and he loved to travel to the British Isles. To the British Isles. The journey had made such a strong impression on him that he actually wrote a book called Backwards to Britain. And it was a novel that he, it was one of his first novels, but it wasn't published until after his death. And so he wrote a lot of things that weren't even published till he died. And it was in 1861 that the couple's only child, Michelle Jean-Pierre Verne, was born. And so it was actually Michelle Jean-Pierre that actually took his father's writings that weren't published, and he published them after his death. So that boy became, very, very important to him. It says that it's when Verne met Hetzel that he really got his stride and he got his encouragement to write. And he first met him in 1862, and Verne at that time was working on a novel that imbued a heavy dose of scientific research into an adventure narrative, and it was Hetzel that found him a champion for developing that style. And one of the first things was published was 5 Weeks in the Balloon. And that was one of the first adventure novels by Verne. And so that's all factored into a major body of his work called Voyages Extraordinaire. And so, but we know that he became famous from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and, Around the World in 80 Days, and Journey to the Center of the Earth. But he also wrote other science fiction novels. Around the Moon he wrote, Discover the Earth he wrote, and so all of these works have been translated into English. And when that started to happen, then Verne actually began to make money on his writing. And you can also see that I think that, if I have this correct, that he is the second most translated author into the English language. And so his works have been really, provided to us because they were so great and because they were so good. Now, the thing that also, it's almost like the same thing happened to Dixon. As Verne got really good with writing, there began to be a lot of trauma in his own life. His own son, Michelle got so rebellious he had to be sent to a reformatory. His son Michelle caused him a lot of trouble. He got mixed up with a young girl, and there was trouble there. In 1886, Verne was shot in the leg by his nephew, and it left him a kind of partially crippled for the rest of his life. He limped around. His longtime publisher and collaborator, every writer needs an editor. But Hetzel died a week after he was, shot in the leg. His mother passed away the same year. And so when you look at some of his later work, they get a little darker. And, he wrote things like The Purchase of the North Pole. He wrote Propeller Island. These are not some of his most famous works. He wrote The Master of the World. And essentially all these books are actually semi-prophetic, and they warn of the dangers of technology. So if you look at him and if you look at his life, he was kind of like the inspiration to develop technology. But then when he saw the outcome of what it could do, it kind of did get discouraging. And then, in 1888, he was stricken with diabetes, and he died at home on March 24th, 1905. And so it is amazing how, in a writer's career, it takes so much time to get up and running and get your stride and get going. And then it does seem that you're older by the time you actually get going. And then, at the end of life, there can be disasters. People do die. You do get sick, these kind of things. And then you can kind of get darker and get more melancholy in your writing. But still, I think Jules Verne leaves us a legacy, and he leaves us some really classic writing that we can really enjoy. Okay, so before we end the program today, what I want to do is I want to just talk a little bit about, you know, the plot summary of the book. And again, I'm not going to give too much away because I would like you to read it if you haven't read it. And I know because I haven't read it, there's other people out there that haven't read it. And, you know, but we shouldn't really, just because it was is written so long ago doesn't mean that we shouldn't we shouldn't read it, because sometimes the classics, you know, are just it's just a great story. But here's the plot summary. And the book opens in the year 1866. And here there's these coastal communities around the world. And they're all abuzz because there is rumors of this huge sea monster. And I remember seeing 20,000 Leagues as a boy a long time ago. And, you know, I remember in some ways the special effects weren't as good then as they are now. But still, I don't really... I'd like to swim in water where I can see my feet. That's the way I am. In other words, give me a swimming pool. I've taken my kids to the beach, but man, if I can't see my feet, I don't want to go there. And then of course when we watch that horrible movie Jaws. But anyway. So that's how it opens. And you know, the sailors report seeing this large, fast moving creature, and it's accompanied by this strange glow. And then several ships that approach the creature, they've been seriously damaged. So essentially then, the as the book progresses a little bit, in 1867, this is a year later, and here's the main character of the book, and I should say the narrator. There is the renowned French naturalist Professor Aronnax, he has been studying in America. And he published his theory on the monster, and it kind of made him famous. And so he thought it was this enormous narwhal, and the horn of it on this sea animal, it could damage even the best-made ships. And so, you know, he's supposedly now won some fame for this. And I failed to mention that actually... Verne did come to America, and he studied in America. Actually, he studied in Eastern New York, and he was just thoroughly impressed with America. And so he actually, when he is involved in all the happenings of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, he's actually in America. Now, Aronnax does have a really dedicated servant, and it's spelled Conseil. In the book, but it's actually conseil, and it actually does mean counsel, like, you know, to give advice. But he's got this famous, very dedicated servant. But just as they're ready to depart America, they're going to leave New York, they're going to return to their home in France. Aronnax has been studying in America. He's invited to join the American vessel, the Abraham Lincoln, and it's a frigate ship, it's like a warship. Now, It's even though there have been two ships in America named for the Abraham Lincoln, this is still all made up. This is just not fact. But they what they do is they're invited, because he's been so, you know, popularized now by what he wrote about the monster, that he and his servant are invited to get on the American frigate Abraham Lincoln, and they're going to hunt down the narwhal. And so Aronnax is just enticed by this. Conseil goes along because he loves his master, and they're headed for the Pacific Ocean where this creature was last sighted. And so while they're on the Aronnax, they meet this other main character named Ned Land, and he is a Canadian harpooner. And if you've known anything from Moby Dick, I mean, you know about harpooners. They were the crazy guys that would go out on the end of the ship and try and harpoon the whales. Okay, so they go on this journey for 8 months, hunting for the narwhal, and they can't find it. Well, they do finally find it in Japanese waters, and that's when everything kind of goes electric and everything begins. And the Abraham Lincoln... it runs up against this narwhal, or this, you know, huge whale, and Ned Land tries to harpoon it, and just by chance, then Aronnax and his servant Conseil are thrown overboard. All three of them are thrown overboard. The frigate is damaged. It can't catch them. It can't find them. They don't send anybody out to get them, and they end up standing on the narwhal or the submarine. So that's all I'm going to give you today. If you haven't started to read the book, please start reading it. I think it is, to me, it's even very interesting. And, you know, since we're running out of time, we're just going to end it there today. Now, I would very much like to hear what you've had to say about our Summer of Classics series. I did receive a longer letter about JBL totally, and I think I'll read some of that to you next time. But next time, we are going to begin our 60-plus panel discussion of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And remember, we're not going 20,000 leagues down. We're just going to be traveling all over the world under the water, and there's a lot of things we have to see. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
Been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.